Thank you, Ken. And good morning, everyone. This is Bob Elson. And we're set as usual with our half-hour sports show from the lobby of Northwest Federal. And we're delighted to, starting today, to become associated with this fine radio station, WAIT, a very, very fine station. I'm happy to be back with them. I've done programs on this station for many years. And remember, this program will be heard every Sunday morning from 11:30 to 12 with top personalities. Our guest today is one of the country's outstanding horse racing authorities. He is the turf editor of the Chicago Daily News. He is a handicapper. He's been an owner. He spent his life in horse racing. And I'm talking about Dave Feldman, an old friend. And if you enjoy racing, the sport of kings, I know that you'll enjoy listening to Dave Feldman. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Say, is your bank open when you're busy and closed when you're not? Well, Northwest Federal Savings knows that a good place to save is ready for you whenever you're ready. So Northwest Federal's open 63 hours a week. Now, if you work evenings, you can come to Northwest Federal 6 full days. Northwest Federal's open Monday, Thursday, and Friday evenings. And if the only time you can get to Northwest Federal is 8 o'clock in the morning, well, that's okay, too. Because Northwest Federal has early bird service every morning from 8 o'clock. You'll find 6 convenient Northwest Federal savings centers throughout Chicagoland, including our new location at 72 East Randolph. Come into Northwest Federal Savings on your way to, from, or between work, shopping, or home anytime, because Northwest Federal Savings keeps the best hours yours. We're delighted to have an old friend of mine and a gentleman who's been a most interesting interview for me over the last 20 or 25 years on the subject of racing, and that is Dave Feldman, who's associated with a great newspaper, the Chicago Daily News. Dave, we're almost at the end of 1977. What have been the big stories in horse racing this year?
I think Steve Cawthon's riding ability has been the standout story of the thoroughbred season. I don't have to tell you too much about Cawthon. Of course, the Ringer case in New York, the Cinzano-Lebon case, was something out of this world. I think those were the two outstanding stories. No one more. Seattle Slough was or is still a great three-year-old, and just because he was beaten at Hollywood Park one day, everybody thought he was a bum. But that's a misconception, because one horse loses a race, you know, that doesn't make the game. You know, if the Sox or the Cubs lost one game, just one would be terrific. Seattle Slough only won, lost one race. I believe he'll come back and race at Hialeah, but those are the three stories. Cawthon, the Ringer case, and Seattle Slough.
Incidentally, as you probably know, Sports Illustrated has a terrific story on the Belmont Swindle.
Is that right? Well, I want to tell you, reading that story is like eating custard pie. That's how much I enjoy it. I read as much as I can about it. And what makes it more appetizing is the fact that I personally know Dr. Girard, who was involved, the veterinarian,
yes,
and the owner-trainer, Jack Morgan. Jack Morgan's a personal friend of mine. You know, I've known him for years. He used to be an assistant to Doc Girard. That is what the veterinarian work. Knowing the two people so well, every time I read something, you know, I start laughing. I didn't think that Dr. Girard was so sharp to perform what he did, if he did it. And somebody made a lot of money. And the oddity of the whole thing was that Dr. Girard, about every 2 months, would see me and say, "Say, do you want to buy any horses out of South America or from South America?" I'd say, "Where are they?" Say, "Well, they're in South America. I'll go down and pick you out a couple of horses." So there's no doubt that he has bought horses in South America, and they claim that he bought two similar horses so he could eventually do something about it.
Dave, is it strange in this day and age, and especially at a prestigious racetrack like Belmont, to have a thing like this happen? And what happens at Belmont, Santa Anita, all the other tracks to prevent something like this happening?
Well, see, that doesn't happen in the States anymore. I'm sure it happened years ago. I know it did. I saw it happen one day. Rapid Bone ran as a ringer at Hawthorne about 25 years ago. That's before they had the lip tattoo. Once they put the lip tattoo in, it's very difficult to run a ringer. However, some people snuck some things over and got some registration full certificates and changed them and then registered the horses and had them lip tattooed according to those registration papers, but those days are over. Many years ago, they identified the horse with a night eye. That's a little bony colored growth almost in back of the horse's knee. It's maybe inches apart on different horses, and it isn't always the same size, and it was a pretty good identification thing, but you could sneak too many horses over as a ringer, so they started the lip tattoo. However, in South America, they don't have the lip tattoo. They all go by the night eye. When those horses were shipped from South America into the States, all they had was the night eye to go by, and sometimes when you're well-known, like Dr. Gerard, or maybe it'd be some other person, not necessarily him, why, you can put the registration papers in, and maybe the pictures, the photos of the horses for identification purposes aren't exactly perfect, but they figure, oh, Dr. Gerard or Dave Feldman, he's okay, you know. So they pass it, and I understand there was some question about the identification of Cinzano and Lebon, but then somebody said, well, we'll straighten out the papers. Instead of checking the horse to see what was wrong with the identification, they checked the papers and straightened out the papers. You know what I mean? They checked the wrong thing, and apparently somebody put over a big deal. Dr. Gerard, it is known himself, cashed about $80,000 worth of tickets, spending, I think, $150 on that horse that paid $119. Supposedly, Lebon, who was really Cinzano, a much better horse, and then some trainer. The trainer hasn't been identified. Cashed three trifecta tickets. There they call it the triplets, the same thing. Was picked a race 1, 2, 3. They paid $29,000. They had three tickets, so there goes another $90,000 or so. Well, they made a lot of money, you know, but sometimes it doesn't last too long. And as somebody said, when they get through, it'll all go to the attorneys.
Dave, you were telling me an interesting story while we were having a cup of coffee about an identification system a number of years ago, a long time ago at Arlington.
Well, years ago, I don't know whether they had the lip tattoo in or not. I don't think they did. However, I can remember it vividly because Bill Cunningham, a great clocker in his day, was asked to be the track identifier. In many areas, the clockers at that time were the identifiers. You know, they supposedly knew the horses. Cars. No clocker, no human knows 10% of the horses that just pass him. However, if he says, somebody says, well, that's Joe Schmo, he can look it up his book, look at his identification book, and see the markings on his legs, the white on his legs, and the blaze in his face in the night. You put everything together, and you can't identify the horse. That is, if you stand there for 3-4 minutes and look at all the things on the horse and then check your markings off the registration that you have listed in your book. Well, Bill Cunningham, who has passed away some years ago, was sitting in the far corner of the paddock at Arlington, and I watched it. All these horses are being saddled, and then they pass him, and he'd look at him, and he'd try to look at his book. By the time he'd opened up one of the pages, six horses had passed him. There was no way in this world to identify the horses. And I saw it, and I said, my God, if I weren't working for the newspaper, or if I wanted to be a thief, what a spot, you know, to really cash in. You could run a $20,000 horse in a $2,500 claiming race. He couldn't lose unless he fell, and how many can fall? If you did it 10 times, you know, you'd have to be one of the richest men in the world. But I didn't have that kind of blood in me, and I got a hold of Bill Reagan, who was then the steward. And I said, Bill, I want to show you something you won't believe. And I brought him down. I said, now watch Bill identify these horses. Horses were saddled. I'd all go past him in a hurry. He'd look at his book. Time he'd look at one horse, the whole field was past him. He said, my God. So the next day they got another younger fella to check the horses, and it was okay. Whether anybody put over a ringer in that time, only God knows.
Oh, that's a very cute story. You know, we have a problem here in the city of Chicago and in the state when it comes to racing about whether off-track betting is good for racing and good for the state. I know they have it in New York. I'm just wondering what your personal opinion is.
Well, remember this. This has to be my personal opinion.
You're not speaking for your newspaper.
I'm not setting any policies for the Chicago Daily News. They set their own policies. But if you want to ask me, you know, as a horse player or an owner or a trainer, I suppose it would be good. For what reason? If I look at it as an owner or trainer, the purses would be much bigger. If there would be much bigger, instead of the horse owners losing, instead of 90% of the horse owners losing money, there might only be 5% of the horse owners looking money. And I own horses. I'm looking for bigger purses. Off-track betting would give us bigger purses, and I would be much better off. As a bettor, Well, if you're a person that wants to hang around a loop or your neighborhood and bet, well, then a person like that would be better off. Personally, I go to the track, and I wouldn't care to bet off-track betting. I enjoy myself at the track. I have to be there anyway for my work for the Chicago Daily News or as a trainer or as an owner. So off-track betting doesn't help me having the parlors out there. Purse-wise, however, it would be much better for the owners because they would get bigger purses. As far as the racing structure is concerned, it would be much better because racing has deteriorated terribly in Chicago over a period of years. Bigger purses make for better racing. You'd have better stables come here with bigger purses, and you'd have better racing. So if you want to look at it that way, why, it would be helpful.
You were around at the time, so I can ask you this question. When you say that, well, we're not getting the caliber of horses that we got here many, many years ago, and still Chicago is the greatest city in the world. We have some fine tracks here. Was that lady who went to California, was she responsible for the fact that things have changed here in racing, and to what degree was she responsible?
You're talking about Marge Lindheimer. Marge Lindheimer was great for racing itself because she lured the better stables here. She knew how to do it. She put up a lot of money. She didn't give too much away probably for the cheaper horses, gave a lot of money away for the better horses. Maybe I shouldn't even explain it that way because at that time everybody seemed to be pretty well satisfied with the purse distribution, but she became friendly with a lot of big owners, and she invited them here, and she had a post and paddock club that she made a lot of rooms out of, and they kept the owners and trainers here in a happy mood. They wined and dined them day and night, and they came here for a lot of reasons. One, because they were well treated, and the other was that California and New York at that time didn't have the purses that we had. And all the stables congregated here. It was like the summer racing capital of the world. So Marge did a great job. Now, a few trainers or owners may have been peeved at her from time to time for little things that she did. But as far as class racing was concerned, she brought it here.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the leading authorities in the country on horse racing. And that's Dave Feldman, the turf editor of the Chicago Daily News, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Dave, I had the pleasure of going out to the track with you this morning and being in the stable area and seeing some of your horses, and it was an enjoyable experience for me. I did it a couple of times before when I was on the racing board. It leads me to this question. We know that the part that the wonder drugs have played in the last 15 or 20 years in the business of maintaining good health. For example, pneumonia used to be a deadly disease. Now there are antidotes for it that make it so it's not that dangerous at all. What about the use of drugs, and how far can you go with drugs when it comes to horses?
Well, there's a lot of forbidden drugs, narcotics, and you can't use any narcotics whatsoever on horses. But we use various vitamins, and of course you know about butazolidine that reduces inflammation in the horse's legs. That's been the biggest innovation in racing that I've ever seen as far as medication is concerned. Many racing commissions all over the country, not necessarily here, frown on butazolidine. They think, boy, this is something that the horsemen or horses shouldn't have. I remember Ted Atkinson, the state steward, saying that he didn't care for butazolidine because horses didn't have any feelings in their legs when they ran, and they might just snap a leg off and kill a jockey. That was one of the worst statements I ever heard in my life, and so far as racing is concerned, from a racing official, because when you administer butazolidine to a horse, all it does is reduce the inflammation, puts the horse in pretty good shape for that race. And he certainly has the feeling in his legs. Before they had butazolidine, 90% of the people that wanted to do away with the inflammation or the pain in the horse's legs, they put them in ice. They put them in ice for 2 or 3 hours. That's when they had the numbness. That's when they didn't have any feeling. And that's when it was so easy to snap a horse's leg off. Years ago, many years ago, they permitted novocaining a horse's leg. They didn't permit it. There wasn't any ruling against it. When you novocaine a horse's leg, he has no feeling as they would your jaw. Then the horse could snap his leg off, or as I say again, with ice. I've seen horses walk out of the stall after it erased. They couldn't walk. They didn't even have a leg under them. They'd fall down. But with butazolidine, the horse knows he has his leg under him at all times. All it does is get the inflammation out of it. He has all of the rest of the feeling. And the problem and the inflammation that he had before the race comes back gradually, a little bit at a time. You ice a horse, he can't walk the next morning. A horse that's sore, he's twice as bad the next day. With butazolidine, he's hardly hurting at all. I think it's very good for the horse.
Dave, I'm sure you've heard the opinion expressed by many people that off-track betting does one thing. Today, people who want to go to a racetrack or normally or want to bet on a horse have to go to the racetrack. If you had off-track betting and you had places to bet all over the Chicago area, there is the point of view that a lot of people who can't afford to lose would be betting on horses every day.
Well, that's another story. You know, for years, everybody looked out for everybody else. You know, who's going to look out or worry about somebody spending their bread money by going to a off-track betting parlor? I know when I was 12 years old, believe it or not, I probably visited 10 bookmakers in Chicago. When I was 15 years old, I probably went to 50 bookmakers in Chicago. I'm talking about illegal bookmakers. Nobody looked out for me, and nobody told me, don't go there. You'll lose your bed money. Won't be able to eat tonight. So things have changed even more. So now we're going to worry about somebody that can't buy a can of beans. They know they can look out for themselves. Everybody must think out their own problems. I don't think that's part of the problem. If people want to gamble, they go to Vegas. Pretty soon they're going to go to Jersey. Pretty soon they're going to go to Miami. And I think people can take care of themselves pretty well. Yeah. So as far as hurting anybody financially, sure, somebody might go and overspend. How many people go to the racetrack right now and overspend? Many a fella leaves there, you know, maybe with a few cents left. One good thing about a bookie, though, years ago, if you went broke, he'd give you a car for a home and dinner money, so that was pretty good, wasn't it?
I should say so. You referred to young Cawthon as one of the big stories in racing of the year. I know that you're familiar with some of the greats like Schumacher and Arcaro and, let's say, Lafitte Pincai and some of these others. What does he have that, let's say, Schumacher or Arcaro didn't have? He born with this great sense that he seems to have when it comes to riding horses?
You know, I wasn't born on a horse for sure, but I'll tell you, Cawthon was. I did a story on Cawthon a couple of weeks ago, and before I did it, I called his mother and asked her if she sent some pictures of Cawthon that would go with the story. She sent me a bunch of small snapshots when Cawthon was 2 years old, and I swear he's sitting on a racehorse when he's 2 years old. He had a little pair of pants on, no shoes, stockings, nothing, no underwear, nothing, just a little pair of pants. You never see anything like it. 2 years old. He was born on a horse. This was meant to be. This was by design. This didn't happen by chance. Cawthon's father was a blacksmith. When his little Toddy went around the track with his father told me this, father named Tex, blacksmith, very good blacksmith, incidentally. I guess everybody in the family does everything right. But anyway, Cawthon started to come to the track, and he told his father, when he was about 12 years old, I want to be a rider. You know, I want to be a rider. He watched his father shoe horses. He watched the horses work. He went to the gate and stayed there day after day. Every race, and became so friendly with the starter started to point things out to him. You know, after they broke, see what he did? You see what he did? He went up in the stands with his father and friends, ex-jockeys and trainers, and they showed him what jockeys were doing wrong. His father got him 50 rolls of film of races to take home at night. The kid didn't go out. He wasn't playing ball or whatever. He was sitting at home at night watching these films over and over and over again for hours with his father, without his father. And he wanted to see all this. I'm sure he wasn't smart enough to figure, well, someday I'll be in Arcaro. But I'm sure that he thought, if I see all this, I really know what I'm doing. And he really knows what he's doing. This kid's got everything. He's got poise. He doesn't worry about getting hurt. He's cool. Everybody else says something good about him. To me, he's got his mind works like a machine. I've never seen anybody think things out so well.
Dave Feldman, when it comes to breeding of horses, and you hear about, for example, a stud fee that they pay for, have secretariat stand in stud and things like that, what about the dam? Isn't the dam the most important? I mean, secretariat now has, what, 7 or 8 offspring. None of them seem to be anything.
Well, there's a couple that won, and there's no doubt in my mind, and top raters will tell you the same, that the dam is 75% of the deal. If they take secretariat and breed them to some ill-bred mares, you know, mares that never won or never had any breeding or don't look good, I want to tell you something. The foals are going to be very similar. They're going to be pretty bad. But you take a top dam, you take a top mother and breed her to a mediocre stud, you just might get a great horse. It's the dam. You see it every day if you look at it. Of course, there's exceptions. Some good stud might be bred to some poor mare and may get a fair horse. But in most cases, you take that real good mare to a fair stallion, and you got a real good horse. The mare is what counts, and all the breeders know it, and the people who pay the money know it, too.
Dave Feldman, would you consider Secretariat one of the great racehorses of all time?
No doubt about it. He was like Cawthon. He did a lot of thinking. I used to stand in front of that horse and watch him. Looked like he'd think everything out, but he was huge. You know, he was like a fullback on a football team. This horse was powerful. He had tremendous strides. He was strong. He'd overpower a horse. And there's no doubt he's one of the best. Maybe he's the best of all time. Count Fleet was great. Citation. You know, a lot of good horses. And you always remember the last as the best love. Well, it's the same way with racing. Secretariat was the best horse that came along recently. So we'll remember him in a couple of years. Had Seattle Slough won at Hollywood Park and gone undefeated. Say, next year they would have said he's better than Secretariat, right? The last is always the best remembered. But I never saw anything before. Citation, you know, good horses usually win 2, 3, 4 lengths. Citation could win by 15, 20, won one race by 32 lengths. I was at Belmont Park that day. I couldn't hardly see the other horses. They looked like they got lost in the darkness. Secretariat, nothing like him. But when Secretariat someday is bred to a top mare, I think we'll see it. But he was from a rheumatic family. Secretariat was by Bull Ruler. Bull Ruler was rheumatic. He had a bad back. When he'd go out on the track, you'd think he was going to fall down on the way to the post, and then he'd warm out of it. Fitzsimmons was his trainer, and he used to gallop him up and back in the path at Hialeah Park before he'd bring him in the paddock and warm him up and get him out of that soreness. Secretariat was the same way. When he went out in the track, he'd almost limp the first few minutes, and he'd come out of it, and then he was all horse. So what I'm trying to say is now if that breeding keeps going that way and his foals are rheumatic too, we don't know how bad they'll be, but if they're not rheumatic, they're going to be good horses.
Dave, I know you're an all-around sports fan. You've heard the reference that pitching is 75 to 80% of the game of baseball. What percentage would you say in a successful racehorse is the jockey and the horse?
Not much. Not 75%. 5%. 10%. It only comes in close finishes or sneaking through a hole or doing a little rating. Everybody can push the same way. If they were all sit there and they were all in paths and how to keep the same way, only the best horse would win every time. They say Cawthon is great, and I know that better than anybody else. I spotted him as the first person who realized we had some great.
He rode a horse for you here.
Oh, he rode a horse for me here this year, but he rode a horse for me last year at Arlington and put up a great ride on a plater called Rusty Coin that was great. I mean, a great ride. Cawthon's got everything. But, you know, if Cawthon is everything to a horse, why did he go 4 days without a winner last week? Then he rode 6 winners. I mean, it was all a jockey who won with a lot of those horses. Most of them were favorites. They finished out of the money. So it isn't the jockey that really counts as the horse. But the jockey adds to it, and as far as I'm concerned, it's 5% or 10% of the deal, and if you get a good jockey, he'll tell you the same. And if a jockey can't ride today and 4 of those horses win, he'll say, my God, you know, I would have ridden those winners. Another jockey rode him, but he admits that one jockey can do as well as another, but Cawthon, or Carroll, Shoemaker, they have that something and had that something extra, and that's the difference.
Well, this kid evidently was born with it.
Oh, he was born with it, no doubt about it. This kid's the best thinker I ever saw in my life. I knew Shoemaker and Arcaro when they were young, and I talked to him and interviewed him and wrote about him. I talked to Cawthon the first time. I scratched my head. I said, what do we have here? This is, you know, really something extra. I wrote so much about him, the editor at the paper said, Dave, you've gone crazy. Every few days you're writing about Cawthon. Who is this guy? Last winter I called him up one night from Florida, and he said, I see what you mean. He was in New York, you know, riding 4 or 5 winners every day. This kid is something special. Now he's going to go to Santa Anita to ride. He's going to leave Aqueduct. It's cold there, and besides, he wants to follow Affirmed, who he thinks might win the Kentucky Derby. He'd ride 4 winners for everyone, 4 winners in New York for everyone he's going to ride at Santa Anita, but he's going to have all that cold weather and all that mud, and he's got plenty of money, and he didn't get too rich, don't get me wrong, but he'd be around Affirmed. He'd be galloping him, riding him in his races, and going on with him in case he can win the Triple Crown. I think he's making a good move. I think Affirmed's the best 2-year-old and most promising 3-year-old right now. I think Aladar is the second best, and a horse called Believe It who beat Aladar the other day, I think he's the third best. But I think those are your 3 best horses right now in order named for the Kentucky Derby.
Our guest today is Dave Feldman, the turf editor of the Chicago Daily News And as you can tell while you've been listening, one of the best informed men in the country on the sport of kings, horse racing. And I'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Say, is your bank open when you're busy and closed when you're not? Well, Northwest Federal Savings knows that a good place to save is ready for you when you're ready. And ready to offer savers the kind of services you get with the Northwest card. A special feature available to savers who maintain a $500 balance. Here's what you get. Traveler's checks, gift checks, special occasion checks, registered checks, all with no service charge. Need document photocopies or lamination? It's free with the Northwest card. There's a special quick check cashing ID card with your picture. Even special vacations for Northwest card members. So get a world of the services you need often by getting a Northwest card at any of six convenient Northwest Federal Savings Centers throughout Chicagoland, including our great new downtown location at 72 East Randolph. That's right around the corner from Michigan Avenue. Be part of a special group and be a special person at Northwest Federal anytime, because Northwest Federal Savings keeps the best hours yours. Dave, I've asked you before, and I've always been interested in your answer to the question about the intelligence of horses, racehorses I'm talking about. As I said this morning, I had the pleasure of seeing some of your horses out there and seeing the way they're kept, and I know what horse racing has meant in your lifetime. How would you compare the intelligence of a racehorse, say, with a smart dog? Does a horse know when he wins a race?
Oh, I'm sure some of them know. You know, they have that hot racing blood in them, and they've been schooled and schooled and schooled and worked together with different horses, and they feel that feeling of the jockey nudging them when they come to the wire and where it's at. One thing about a horse, once he sees something, he knows that he's seen it, and the next time he sees it, he knows he's been there. So if he's nudged down to that wire, when he races again or gives it a track again, he knows where that wire's at. I'm not going to tell you that every horse on a racetrack knows exactly where that wire's at, but you ever see a horse throw a jockey during the race? He passes the wire, you know, with the field. He goes about an eighth of a mile or quarter of a mile, comes right back to the wire where the jockeys get off and dismount and they take the saddle off, right? So they know where the wire's at. Well, a dog is much smarter. You know, a dog does too many things.
Yeah.
Pick up the newspaper for you and he'll just do a million things. But a horse knows what time it is when he's supposed to eat. He knows when he's going to go to the races. He can tell the way you're working around him. You're getting him ready for the track. He knows he's going to the races that afternoon. He knows a lot of things, but he isn't as smart as a dog.
Dave Feldman, how hard is it to train a young racehorse to a starting gate?
It isn't that bad. You take him and walk him around there. You know, you don't put him right in the gate. You just get him used to seeing the thing. The idea is to let him see what he's going to do, and that's the big thing. Once he walks around that gate 3-4 times, he'll usually walk in, hang a little bit. Assistant starter will pet him, you know, and the boy or girl on top of him will fool around with him, nudge him. Of course, you have different kinds of horses, you know. You have some horses that are almost insane. They're scared of that gate, and they want to fight it, and they want to kick it, and they want to do everything else. But that's only like 1 in 100 that really fights it. Most of them get acclimated to it, and they're okay.
Dave, if you had it all to do over again and choose a career, what would it be?
Same thing. My life is horse racing. I just might bet more carefully than I have the past 40 years. You know, that's one thing I think I've learned.
Dave, thanks so much for being with us. Been a pleasure as always.
Thank you, and I enjoyed it.
Dave Feldman, the turf editor for a great newspaper, the Chicago Daily News. Remember that our program will be heard on this station, WAIT, every Sunday morning from 11:30 to 12. We'll have many, many outstanding guests. I hope that you'll make it a point to be with us. Bob Ilson saying goodbye until next Sunday at 11:30.